Hello there. Welcome to The Yummy Factor, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the mesmerizing world of filming food commercials. I'm Xander, food and tabletop director, and I'll be sitting down with the true masters of the craft, including directors, food stylists, practical special effects wizards, and anyone involved in this crazy world to hopefully shed some light on what it takes to make food look absolutely mesmerizing on screen. Today, I'm talking with Kosma Tiskevich, a producer with a unique upbringing. Raised by an award-winning food-loving dad and surrounded by creative gear, she's developed a keen instinct for food and tabletop projects.
So, welcome to the show, Kosma.
Hello.
Super happy to have you on board. For everyone who's listening, we have Polish film royalty here with us today. You grew up in a family that, you know, were a big deal in film and television in Poland. And then you came, or like, I guess you were born in Germany, but your father was also very much involved with TV and tabletop and food. But, you know, let's start from the beginning, because you told me that you would wake up in the mornings and food stylists were already in your kitchen shooting a TV show.
Exactly. So, like you said, my father was always into film business. He started early as a DOP. He studied in Paris and went then to Switzerland, and always had this love for food. Food was always one of his biggest passions. And bringing those things together was always his dream. So he started one day like saying, okay, let's do some nice food shots and let's try to, especially for the German market, because Germans and the food culture is like, let's say, different to in comparison to France.
Mm-hmm. So he really how so?
I don't know, you get better food for less money. Ah. This is a big point. And they kind of celebrate food much more. Yeah. And celebrate eating.
100%. Yeah, yeah. Spanish and French and Italians.
Exactly. And yeah, so finally this led to that I grew up on set, which means when my alarm clock started ringing, I stood up at the age of, really started when I was, I think, 7 or maybe 8-ish something. And I went into the bathroom and I went into the kitchen, and in the kitchen were already like 10 people prepping the kitchen, actually.
Crazy.
As they knew that at a moment I would come in and want to have my breakfast.
So you want to do your cereal and then there's already someone with a Bunsen burner like prepping.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
Sometimes they prepared breakfast for me, which is always nice to get like really...
Nowadays, you are a producer yourself. I think you've worked in some of the biggest production houses here in Germany, including the Marmalade, that is, you know, very much has to do with tabletop and complex food commercials. And I think nowadays what we talk about a lot is how can we make food cool, be on scene? You know, everyone comes with the lure pack commercials that kind of revolutionized this whole thing, I think like 15 years ago, and kind of still do. And you were telling me, and this is like super interesting, that your father, he was this, you know, this kind of backdoor engineer that he would like fix his own watches and stuff. And he actually was one of the first people creating cameras and creating rigs and creating all these tools back ages ago. Yeah, to make things completely unseen. Tell us a little bit about like what these inventions from your dad were.
Yeah, he's, I mean... DOP, director, but also cook, and really kind of an inventor for such things. And he loved that. He loves like tweaking, sneaking, whatever, building little tiny crazy things. He always did that. And with the camera work, he went kind of brave also, because he started to rig the cameras in like impossible positions. So for one commercial, he rigged the camera like underneath a horse carriage, exactly, and that let the horses really run over the field after some
he basically created the first GoPro.
Yeah. kind of a really big GoPro.
Because, I mean, we're talking about these big 35 millimeter cameras, yeah. right? With like a film rolling like...
Exactly.
And cameras that are extremely expensive with lenses that are even more expensive.
Yeah, I think the producers must have had some kind of, not panic, but maybe little kind of heart attacks when it comes working with my dad. He was like super brave. He was like, let's do it. Let's try it. If we don't try it, nobody will try it.
But he was the DP on this. It was a commercial, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of commercials.
And for this particular, do you remember what commercial this was? Maybe I can find it somewhere.
Yeah, it was the Grazovska commercial. Uh-huh. It must have been in the 70s or 80s.
That's vodka, right?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So like...
Polish vodka.
Polish vodka, the one with like the little...
Exactly. It has a hint of vanilla in mm-hmm. the taste.
Nice. And so, because you said that your dad was a director and a DP sometimes. Was he like directing... this commercial probably, and he said the way, you know, us directors now go, I want to make something completely unseen. And then the producers go like, what do you want to do?
I'm not sure if he was directing this one or if he was the DP only. I really cannot tell, but he's very good in convincing. So, I mean, also I could believe if he would have been the gripper or the first AC again.
He did it all. He did everything.
Like,
and then you told me that he created one of the very first endoscopes or periscope. I don't know like what the exact term is in English, but yeah, tell that story because it's very funny. He like stole a periscope from a hospital. What was it?
It was less inventing, more stealing. Or let's say borrowing it from somewhere. Yeah, he always wanted to come up with new ideas for the shows when he then switched more into television formats and then less commercial formats. So, and with his own production company, he was free to do it. So he was trying a lot of things and he said, oh, it would be so cool if we like can make it like a visual riddle. So let's get some nice objects, really funny objects, and just film them as close as possible and let the people guess what object we do see until we go far away.
I think I do remember these kind of shows back in the days that you saw this macro world and it was really crazy. And then the narrator was like, what do you think this is? It might be a this, it might be a that. And as it goes out and out and out and suddenly, you know, says it's a blah, blah, blah. It's a football. And it's like, wow, that's what a football looks like when it's like super close.
Yeah, because you really saw the textures. Mm-hmm. And this is when I kind of fell in love with the macro world. So this is, yeah, was very special and lovely because the objects we had some, I only know the German word, Noppenfolie.
Like bubble wrap?
Yeah, exactly.
Which you can't the ones that you squeeze in your hands and, you like know, if you have OCD, you go...
That was hilarious, yes.
And then how did you, I mean, like, was that... those periscope shots, the thing that made you fall in love with the film world. How did you, you know, go over and start producing yourself?
I mean, I didn't really have the choice as I was kind of a cheap worker for this company. So I started at the age of 15, 16, like really to work.
Probably already when you were 7, you're coming into the kitchen like, yeah. Honey, can you pass me the tweezers?
Exactly. Can we get rid of that cable? And now we start to shoot on the beta cam. Can we change this cassette and stuff? I was like, clapper loader.
But that's, one of the things that you told me earlier, and I think is really interesting and very, very cool, is that your dad started producing cooking shows for kids because he was frustrated how nutrition was going very bad and he wanted to teach kids about food so they would like eat better. Was it something like that?
Yeah, because when we came home as kids, I have 3 sisters, so he has 4 daughters, which is already kind of a challenge. But when we came home from school, first thing was bread with Nutella, bread with jam, bread with whatever, but it was always like bread based, so very boring and not very healthy. And as he's really a food lover, So he loves everything about food. He was like, can't you cook yourself? I will do a pancake, do some pasta, easy stuff. And he teaches us this. But we were like, yeah, it takes too long. It's boring.
I just want to put something in my mouth that's yummy as quickly as possible.
Exactly. And then he was like, not really angry, but let's say kind of disappointed because our motivation.
He wasn't angry. He was disappointed. He looked at us and he was like, girls, what are you putting in your faces?
And then he came up with a show just to prove cooking is fun for kids too. So it was like proving us finally that we were wrong.
That is amazing. But like, do you even remember how he, because I mean, back in the days, making a show, it's not like I'm going to make a YouTube channel. You know, you have to, you know, get proper equipment and everything. Do you have any idea how he just like went to a production house and went like, listen, my girls, they're eating shit. I want to teach them how to eat properly. So I need to make a show.
No, for that, actually, his company already exists. And he then kind of wrote the idea paper and he went pitching it to Kinderkanal, to all the TV stations.
Like this kids channel. Man, that's amazing.
And they bought it.
And I read he actually won some awards with the cooking shows and everything.
Yes, also. I don't know how many, but there were some because I believe there wasn't a show like that before with children cooking and having it like this. And then like, I mean, of course there was some styling and some help, but it was kind of authentic. The kids were cooking and they were really cooking. So
he was doing TikTok before TikTok. I'm telling you. And where did you like start then producing and how did it feel? Because production is more like the logistics side. And I guess you grew up in a household where, you know, you're constantly like being more creative. Do you remember what your first projects were?
Yeah, because I was always surrounded by very creative persons, I thought, okay, some of them need to organize them.
Ah.
And I love all this organization work, to be honest. This is a thing I have from my mom, not from my dad. And yeah, I started quite late. I mean, it's like 10 years ago. And I started in a lovely company with love, a great team, really great team. And they were like specialized really on food and on special effects. And I love this because it was like the link to my past and to my childhood. But as I was older, then I got a better understanding of how delicate this work is. Mm-hmm. And this is what I love about it. It's about details. It's about so many little twings. And also the way we work, we don't work in seconds or in minutes. We work in frames per second. This is something that really catches me. This is what I love. And one of my first projects was at this company, was not even tabletop, but a lovely short film called Backstory, which I still love when I see it. I still have to cry a bit because I really, really love it. But so I came into a company and then quickly, I think the next job I did there was for Nivea.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then liquid.
Which is something then, and I haven't talked at all on the show is that food and cosmetics and creams and liquids and oils are very connected. So a lot of, people and production companies who shoot food also shoot, cosmetics, cream, Nivea. And all the shebang.
We call it liquid.
Liquid.
Liquid. No matter if you can eat it or if you put it in your face.
And then, at some point, you also worked for the marmalade that, has all these gizmos and contraptions and all this complex visual world. Yeah. How was that? How's it, working in that machinery and doing crazy, crazy things like that?
It was, on the one hand, demanding because the quality was so high or is still so high to reach what we want to reach ourselves in the production. And I think what I loved the most was first the team and the SFX crew working close as a producer with the SFX team is like really, it's fun, but it's just great. It's like being a kid on a huge playground.
And do you feel the urge as well? Like the same way you, like your dad came up with these weird contraptions to like maybe brainstorm yourself. It's like, hey, how about you do this? And how about you, dad? Do you remember any projects where you got like to put in a little bit of your sauce and your spice?
Yeah, most of them actually. Because lucky as a producer, you have a bit the distance because you are not the creative right. person deep diving directly into images. And if you have the distance and if you see the whole thing, because you have to always survey this whole project, you might come up with another point of views and ideas. So this is what you have to do as tabletop producer, I think.
No, but that's super true. I mean, like, yeah, especially nowadays, like all the jobs are very stressful. I almost feel like you don't have time to, you know, take a step back because, you know, you do have to do the treatment and then the storyboard and you have to start testing and we're shooting in 3 days. And I feel like you have to like kind of like be on your tippity toes all the time. And yeah, I mean, as you say, like if you can look at the project from like a step, you know, take a step back and look at it. And especially with the eye of like, how can we make things more efficient or a little bit cheaper or this and that. I guess it definitely, you know, helps. And especially someone who was raised the way you did, like seeing all these gizmos and contraptions every day.
Yes. I mean, I feel that there is a difference between producers, like producers shooting live action and really tabletop producers, because those are just two different worlds. This is how I feel about it.
What are you doing nowadays? You're at the new production company. Are you still involved with a lot of tabletop?
Yes. I'm at a quite big company now called Hogarth Worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we are not really producing ourselves, but we are like, we are the link between creative agencies and production houses.
And can you explain a little bit for those who don't understand that constellation, you know, what exactly your responsibility would be, you know, on a production?
It took me a year to understand that myself because the company is just huge, or the W2PP world is just a huge thing. I mean, you have always the creative side, which is led by the agencies, so creative. And then you will always have the production who will do and film the shoot, or will take care of the shoot. And because from the agency side, not everybody's experienced in shooting and in organizing and in the understanding of what is needed for such productions, you need someone who's just explaining for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so also production houses don't know how creatives work sometimes, or how they got there to come up with this idea. So it's a bit of a translator.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, you're like Google Translate between, you know, the agency creatives who are their own kind of like crazy storm of creativity and the production house. And I mean, I'm guessing also like your keen eye on understanding how production works and how tabletop works, you'll see if something flies and you'll, you know, see the numbers and you'll go like, this budget won't fly for this concept. So yeah, to talk a little bit about that, how is it in your current job, does your experience come into play?
Well, the moment when they call me is when there's a board where there's food.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing I do is asking, okay, how far are we? When do we need to produce this? Has the client seen this board already? And because then my first thing is do like a budget versus reality check. Always, because this is the worst thing that can happen, that everybody has big expectations and you end up like stressed out trying to make something possible which just wasn't possible from the beginning.
What did you call it? Budget versus reality check. I like that. So you're sort of like the filter, and you'll look at the numbers and you'll look at the concept and then you'll like just send it back and go like, nope, try again.
And go back. Yeah, it depends. I mean, what I bring there is to, because of all the shoots in the past, to bring the right people on there, because mm-hmm. you need to, and this is the challenge, and this is the the challenge I really love on this, find the right crew and persons for those projects, yeah, which are challenging because or there's a leak of time to produce or there's a leak of money sometimes because the budget isn't huge, but the idea is. And to then start to do another round of brainstorming with all of them. So with the creators, with the director, with the producers also.
And there's something that we talked about a few days ago, and I found it like not just nice, but very important nowadays is you said you love putting people together that you like.
Yes.
Good creative people that are nice to work with because, yeah, I mean, I think people are definitely more important than ideas, you know, having a cool concept or having to do this, like it's nothing if you don't have like a good gang that you can rely on and that you like, you have no problems calling at 3 a.m. in the morning if there's a problem or that you can celebrate when something looks particularly awesome. And I think that's really cool, no?
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, look, the time we do spend on working is just massive, I feel. I mean, the hours we have on set, the hours we also in the nights preparing something. You want to spend this time with nice and lovely and good people. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the films I was involved to, the films where we had a good time at the shoot were always the best. Because you feel that instantly when people are having a good time, the result is better.
There's sometimes like directors or DPs that they say, they're super difficult to work with and they're kind of assholes, but their reel looks amazing. And then sometimes people think like, maybe I should be more of an asshole. do you think that sometimes you have to be a little bit, you know, less cool to get like some cool shit done? Or is it all about, you know, having a good team, having good connection and like finding ways to work together?
Finally, if I will ever get this feeling, then I didn't do a great job because then something is wrong in the constellation. And I work with directors and also with people who are like kind of known for being demanding or difficult. But if you just kind of take your time and listen to them, you understand why maybe, and then you can handle them a different way. And then there's a totally different understanding. Mm-hmm. So I feel, I mean, nobody can be that difficult that I would say I need to become rude. I'm not a rude person. I can swear really well. But
so also then I'm guessing is you don't only like as a tabletop specialist, you don't just look at the project and look at all the specs and all everything that needs from the tabletop side and the food selling side or special effects. But you're also putting the team together or like you make sure that the optimal team, like the Ocean's 11 gang comes together to make this project happen.
Ocean's 60, I'm really... yes, exactly. I mean, for every project, the needs are different. So, and also the specs given from the clients are different. I mean, sometimes it has to be a triple, but sometimes you need to reach out and do like 10 or 12 chemistry calls before if it's a huge thing.
Chemistry call, that's something like I was like talking to some international producers with, and they was like, a chemistry call? What is a chemistry call? Could you like quickly explain what a chemistry call is?
Well, especially when you don't have time for treatments or such, you say, okay, let's do a chem call and let's see who we like most, because then it's about humanity. Then it's about, is it a match or not? Mm-hmm. If it's not a match, we don't need to try. And, or you do that to filter in advance when you have like a really huge project and you go into director calls, like 10 or even more before you decide who you finally invite to a pitch. We call those also chemistry calls to just filter. Okay, how was the match there? Because you kind of see very fast if creatives and the directors, if they do have the same understanding. So this is why we do chem calls.
That's it for this episode of The Yummy Factor. If you like the show, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you have questions, you can find the contact information in the description box. The Yummy Factor airs every second Wednesday of the month.